This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
In June of last year, a Texas senator took to the floor of the state house and began talking about women's access to abortions. For over 11 hours, she read letters from women around the state telling stories about why access to abortions was important to them.
By the end of the filibuster against Texas Senate Bill 5, the bill was still destined to pass. But in the meantime, Texas Senator Wendy Davis had captured the attention of a nation. The state house was filled to capacity with supporters, and speculation spread around the country that she would make a run for governor.
Today, she's less than 2 months away from a November election in which she is billed as the first serious Democratic bid for governor of Texas in two decades. This week, she released a memoir in which she details how she rose from being a single mom in a trailer park to the seemingly overnight sensation of June 2013.
Senator Davis joins us now to talk about her new memoir, Forgetting to Be Afraid. Senator, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Veronica.
Well, you start your book with the story of a childhood memory of trying to help your grandfather write a letter after he'd had a stroke. And this was something that was a struggle for both of you. And this turns out to be kind of a metaphor for your political career. What does that story mean to you?
This is a story from when I was around 10 years old, and my grandfather, who'd suffered a stroke and had been left unable to speak, he wanted so much to communicate to his friends. And, of course, this was back before the days of the Internet. And he tried to dictate letters to me to write to his friends. It was a tremendous struggle for both of us. And both of us would cry on those occasions. It brought home to me the power of voice, how important it is, what it means to lose it, and also what it means to give voice to other people.
Was that on your mind in the June of 2013 when you stepped onto the national stage with your famous filibuster?
It was in the back of my mind, and certainly it's been a symbolic part of my journey as an elected official, a public servant. Giving voice to people is what representative democracy is all about. And all too often, unfortunately, what we see is that the voices of people aren't really the ones that are reflected and represented in our legislative bodies. The voices of some powerful special interests are. And I've always been committed to making sure that the people who elected me to serve them are forefront in my mind. That day back in June of last summer was yet another of many days where I have stood and fought for the people that I represent. I've tried very much to be a voice for them. And quite literally, I had the opportunity to do that day by reading the letters, thousands of letters that we'd received of people who wanted to share their very personal stories about the issue of reproductive rights and why it mattered so much, and in the hope, of course, that legislators would listen and would make a different decision about that bill.
Now, that turned out to be a career-making moment for you, and it did thrust you into the national spotlight. Did it change your political ambitions, make you want to go further?
I wouldn't say that it changed my ambition. What it changed for me was a desire to try to make it not the exception, to try to make it commonplace that people's voices are reflected. I've been frustrated as a state senator these last 6 years watching a political process that leaves so many people out of the equation. In 2011, I filibustered a $5.5 billion cut to our public schools. I killed the bill, but the governor called us right back to a special session to push it through, and we've seen the terrible consequences across our state. My story, my book, is one that talks a great deal about how I came from a place of poverty and struggle. A ninth grade educated single mother who raised me and my siblings, becoming a single mother very young myself. I understand very personally the power that education provides through my start at community college and ultimately graduating from Harvard Law School. And it is why I fight as strongly as I do to make sure that as many young children have the opportunities that I had.
Well, so far, response to your memoir has been focused largely on the revealing that you have had two abortions yourself for medical reasons, and roughly a third of adult women are estimated to have had at least one abortion in America. What do you think it is about that part of your book that has elicited the most comments from the media and elsewhere?
I think, you know, as one of my colleagues in the Texas Senate is fond of saying, when you put a face on debates, on issues that we're debating, it changes the dialogue. They move from the abstract to something that's much more personal. The day I read stories on the Senate floor, it was very personal to me. And I felt inspired by the folks who had been willing to share their personal journeys, to share my own in the hopes that it would help other people who might be struggling with some of the same very difficult decisions that I had had to confront.
You waited until now to do it in the form of your memoir. Why didn't you share those stories when you were doing the filibuster and reading the stories of so many other women and placing yourself alongside theirs?
The stories that I read were ones that inspired people not only across our state but across the country who were watching that day. I think that storytelling is very powerful. Through it, we can find ourselves. Sometimes we find shared experiences that are helpful to us. When my former husband and I were confronted with the news that our much-loved, much-wanted baby daughter, Tate, was suffering from a severe brain abnormality, it was the stories that our doctor provided us that other couples had been willing to share that helped us move through our decision-making process and to handle things in the way that we did, doing what we believed was the most loving thing we could do for her and saying goodbye, but also through other stories, making a decision to hold her, to baptize her, to memorialize her in a private ceremony with close friends and family. Stories are powerful ways to connect to each other as humans, and they provide us strength in times when we need it most.
Now, some analysts are saying that by sharing these stories now and by having so much attention focused on them, that you're essentially becoming the abortion rights candidate and that you could be alienating potential Hispanic voters who tend to be Catholic and are also key to any Democratic victory in Texas. Is that something that you're factoring into your Election Day calculus?
You know, I don't think of this as an election calculus. I think of it as I said a moment ago, there's power in putting a face and humanizing these issues. My memoir is a very powerful representation of what education can do in people's lives. And I hope that that part of it inspires people to see why it is that we as a state must invest as we once did in partnering with our young people who are willing to work hard, so that their dreams can come true. I hope that the electorate is really focused on that and so many other issues that are important to us as a state. Primary in this race is the issue of education, our failure to appropriately invest in our children's future, and the desire that people have, whether they are Hispanic or African American or Anglo or Asian, the desire they have to make sure that their children have a brighter tomorrow than they had.
Your own story is one that is remarkable. You grew up incredibly poor, mostly with a single mother. So much of your book is focused on losing your father again and then coming back around to finding him, but also just the poverty and how much you had to come up through with your brothers and sisters. But that kind of climb is something that cultural critics are saying is becoming more difficult in America. Do you see that as something that's still possible in today's world?
It is more difficult. There's no question that it's more difficult. And it's why I'm willing to put my head down and push through fear and fight this fight that I'm engaged in right now. it should not be the exception. It should be the rule that every child who is willing to work hard can make something of themselves. And there's been such a tremendous disinvestment in making that possible, not only at the state, but at the federal level as well. I was the beneficiary of state grants and federal grants that helped make college possible for me. There is much greater demand for those resources now than there are the resources. And I want to make sure, as the governor of our state, if I have the privilege to assume that office, that we refocus our efforts, not only because it's good for individuals, but because it's good for our economy, to make sure that every person has a part in the 21st century economy of Texas, and that we have the workforce that will be needed to fill the jobs of tomorrow and to keep the Texas economic story strong.
We're speaking with Texas State Senator and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Wendy Davis. She got a lot of national attention when she led an 11-hour filibuster against a restriction on abortions in the Texas State Senate. Her new memoir is just out this week. It's called Forgetting to Be Afraid.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're going to continue our conversation with Senator Davis coming up on Wisconsin Public Radio Central Time. Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation with Texas State Senator Wendy Davis. She claimed the national political spotlight in June of last year when she led an 11-hour filibuster against abortion regulations in the state of Texas. She's now running for governor of that state on the Democratic ticket. Her new memoir this week, Forgetting to Be Afraid.
Senator Davis, the veracity of your personal stories has repeatedly been questioned by your critics, ranging from how you balanced your work and your family life to whether you had an abortion, whether this was a convenient retelling of your story. And some feminist critics have argued that this kind of treatment is essentially a gender issue, that when women speak up, the credibility of the things they say are questioned more often than when men do. How do you think response to your campaign and your character have been affected by the fact that you're a woman?
You know, I don't view things through that lens. I know that some people do, and I do believe that it creates a scrutiny that's different. But I just put my head down and think of it as noise, background noise. I am working on something that I know really matters, and I'm willing to suffer through the criticisms, the complaints of folks who say terribly inappropriate things, because I believe in what I'm fighting for, and it's worth it to me to move through that noise, to push forward, focused on what I know is important for the people of my state, and to fight for them.
Do you consider yourself a feminist?
Of course. You know, I believe that making sure that women have equal opportunity in our world is incredibly important. I believe in women's health. I have obviously staked out a position on reproductive rights, but I've also staked one out on equal pay. I passed a bill in the Texas legislature last session to have equal pay for equal work, only to see Governor Perry veto it, and for the person I'm running against in this election saying that he will veto it as well. And yes, these are issues that are important to women as women's rights, but it's a human rights issue that should matter to all of us, because those of us who are women or who love women understand that we are equal partners in this world, that we ought to be able to earn sufficiently to help support our families, whether we are head of households, single head of households, or whether we are dual wage earners. This is a family issue. It's an economic issue. And I know that this and many other issues that appear to uniquely impact women impact all of us, and that people, whether they are male or female, care about them.
Texas hasn't had a Democratic or a woman governor since 1994 with Ann Richards. What has been the most challenging part for you of campaigning as a Democrat in a largely and famously red state?
It's just battling against the feeling of disenfranchisement that people have and inspiring them to believe that their voices, added one by one by one to the other voices in this state, can cumulatively come together in a way that will make a difference. Texas is the state with the lowest voter participation in the country. And so much of that has come from two decades of gerrymandering that have created a climate where only primary elections seem to matter. It is why I was so committed to this race, to forcing onto the public awareness, forcing into the public awareness an understanding of what's at stake, and a conversation about what our values are and whether they're being appropriately reflected. I see, as I travel our state, people inspired and excited and enthusiastic in a way that we haven't seen in two decades in gubernatorial politics. And I trust that people have awoken to the power of their own voices, and they are going to exercise them in this election.
So are you feeling optimistic then about turning around that low civic participation rate in Texas in the next election?
I am optimistic about it. I trust and believe in people, and I see and trust the power of people in this state today.
Your opponent, Attorney General Greg Abbott, is reportedly outspending you 3-1. Do you see this year's Supreme Court ruling that loosened campaign donations as being a factor in your election, your race so far?
No, actually not, simply because in the state of Texas, we have never had campaign limits. And as a consequence of that, our races tend to be historically expensive ones. My opponent had a cachet of cash built up in a campaign account that he'd been raising into for many years that he was able to start off with. I'm proud to say that in the course of the race, we've actually raised a bit more than he has. Unfortunately, I didn't start with that same heavy balance, but I am so grateful to the thousands of people, a historic number, over 145,000 individual contributors who have made our race possible and who have been willing to invest in it, from grassroots $3 donations to larger ones, in order to make sure that we see a good outcome in this election.
Now, Democrats have talked about the prospect of turning Texas blue. What do you think needs to be accomplished by Democrats in the state to convince people to vote blue in a national election?
I think that if Texas is able to demonstrate that it is willing to elect someone who reflects their values, whether they are independents, moderate Republicans, or Democrats, if we are able to come together in a way that demonstrates that there will be consequences to a restriction and a deaf ear to those values, it will demonstrate something across the country as well. If Texas elects a statewide Democrat for the first time in two decades, it will put Texas in play once again on the national landscape. And in the 2016 election, it will be a place where the conversation will be held, and we will not be ignored as we typically are in presidential races. I certainly hope for that.
If you are elected as governor, both chambers of the Texas legislature will still likely be Republican. You'd still have that structural gridlock to contend with. Given that, what would you try to accomplish with the gridlock in place?
I come from a city council background, 9 years on the Fort Worth City Council, where we didn't have D's and R's next to our name. And that's how I learned to work as an elected official. And I've tried to bring that same perspective with me, even in the partisan environment of the Texas legislature. I know from my years of experience in the Texas Senate that there are plenty of people, Republican and Democrat alike, who know that we need to do right by our state by investing in education and transportation and water infrastructure. And I trust and feel confident that I'll be able to bring a sufficient number of voices together toward that common purpose.
Now, you said earlier that to you, the gender issues surrounding politics is background noise to you. But with so few women participating or being elected in office in politics at the state level and the national level, do you feel that you do have a responsibility to women to be a role model and to help change the status quo?
I do feel a responsibility as a role model. I especially feel that as part of this campaign. I cannot tell you how many times I am greeted by young women who sob, who cannot even speak. And it's a reflection of this pent-up demand that our young women and not-so-young women have had to see someone speak for them. It's terribly important that we elect people from diverse backgrounds, gender diversity, racial diversity, economic diversity, so that each of us and our experiences are reflected in the conversation that takes place in the Democratic forum. I feel an obligation to that, and I'm proud as a woman to be someone who has an opportunity to be a role model. I hold that very humbly and with honor, and I will continue to do my best to be a role model for women across the state.
If you don't win, what's next?
I'm going to win.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Senator Davis.
Thank you very much, Veronica.
That was Texas State Senator and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Wendy Davis talking about her memoir out this week. It's called Forgetting to Be Afraid.